The number one reason a customer quits any pest control company is not complex. You failed to solve the pest problem.
This is the PMP Industry Insider Podcast.
Hello and welcome out to another episode of the PMP Industry Insider Podcast, where we take a look at what is changing in the pest and lawn industries, and we take you to the front lines to those that are driving those changes. As always, I'm Donnie Shelton, owner of Triangle Home Services, which has Triangle Pest as well as Triangle Lawn. And with me today is Dan. Dan, would you like to say good morning? We're recording this in the morning. Say, give some good love to our sponsors, talk about our topic and our very special guest that we have for today.
You bet. So good morning, Dan Gordon, PCO Bookkeepers, M&A Specialists. We do CFO work for the pest control industry, as well as exit planning. And if you like our podcast, we invite you to work with our sponsors. If you're interested in marketing, it's a ColMarch by WorkWave. To learn more about that, it's ColMarch.com. We also work with PestSure. If you're interested in industry-specific pest control insurance for auto, workers' comp, general liability, EPLI, and others, it's PestSure.com. And if you're interested in joining a PMP Industry Insider peer group, please visit PMPIndustryInsider.com/peer groups, or go back and listen to episode 136 for more information. We work with a facilitator, David Billingsley, who is outstanding, and we've put several of these groups together, and they work very, very well. Today, we are welcoming back to the podcast Rentokil Terminix's John Myers, CEO of the U.S. Pest Control, and getting to talk with Brad Paulson, Rentokil CEO of North America, for the first time, and we are excited. John joined Rentokil in 2008 as president and CEO of Rentokil North America. Currently, he is president and CEO of Rentokil Terminix, U.S. Pest. Previously, John held various senior positions at Cintas and was president and chief executive at BioQuest. John has a diverse background with extensive sales, marketing, business strategy experience. Graduate of University of Vermont. Wow, I didn't know that. He earned a bachelor's there and an MBA from Mercy University. And so we're excited to have him back on the podcast, along with Rentokil's new CEO, North America, Brad Paulson. Brad joined the company in December 23. Previously, Brad was CEO of Rexel USA, and prior to that, COO of HD Supply. He spent over 9 years at the Home Depot, serving various merchandising leadership roles. Brad attended the United States Military Academy at West Point. By the way, thank you for your service, and graduated with a bachelor's in economics. Additionally, he holds an MBA from Vanderbilt. And so that was off the cuff. I didn't read any of that. And welcome, guys. Appreciate that. Appreciate you guys coming, and really looking forward to this.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to have you. And I, you know, one thing, John, that you need to add to your bio here, that is that you're a guest emeritus on the PMP Industry Insider Podcast episode. Yes.
Yeah,
that needs to go. And I will say, Brad, I did not realize you were a naval guy. You know?
Oh, I'm not. I'm an army guy.
He's an army guy.
Oh, army guy. Oh, that's even worse. No. So I'm an
Air
Force guy.
We'll let that pass. We'll
pass on that.
I'm gonna let that pass because we're just meeting each other the first time.
Donnie's an Air Force guy, and if you ever fly with him, he'll make fun of you.
Never. I would never do that. All righty. So, Brad, obviously, it's the first time on the podcast. I'm sure our listeners want to learn a lot about you. I mean, maybe the Army thing we can probably go on, but I would like to hear a little bit about kind of what your background is. Sounds like you have a lot of experience with consumer, I mean, with Home Depot and then with, you know, just kind of in general, I mean, in that segment of the industry. So I'm just curious, can maybe what made you decide to get into pest control, and then what made you decide to make the move over to pest control?
No, it's, you know, first of all, it's great to be here, guys. Nice to meet you. Looking forward to spending some time together today. You know, for me, I've been lucky. I worked for a number of really terrific organizations, organizations, a number of really good leaders over the years. And the thing for me that's been really consistent is I enjoy companies that they really invest in the frontline associates, where there's a real passion for taking care of the customers. And if you think about, you know, some of the organizations and companies that Dan mentioned, like the Home Depot, like HD Supply, Rexel, all of those companies fit into that category. And when I was thinking about this Rentokil Terminix opportunity, really from the first conversation I had with the team, you know, I've just been blown away by the quality people that we have, the commitment that our organization has made into each of our team members to make sure they look at our company as a place where they can have a really fulfilling career. And then just the real, and I mean this, genuine passion that our team has every day when they get out of bed of helping our customers solve their problems. So it's been a great fit. And in the 4 or 5 months that I've been here, just amazed by what our team has done. I can tell you, I feel really lucky, really fortunate to be leading the team and being a part of the team moving forward.
That's awesome. So, John, a question for you. I mean, I've been in the industry for a long time, but you've become pretty much an industry legend in pretty short order. And we've talked about your career, but never really asked you about, you know, the explosive growth. I mean, I remember the first time I heard about Rentokil coming over to the U.S., it was before the Ehrlich deal. And you've grown it into, you know, I don't know what the number is, but I believe it's well over $1 billion in North America. And so how has your role changed? I mean, how do you go from a guy who's trying to roll up some companies into, you know, running this big portfolio of companies?
Well, great question. And I think I have to address the legend word that you used there. before it comes back to haunt me. But any of us that are married, my wife, you know, would clearly say that I'm a legend in my own mind. But coming from you, I'll take it as a compliment. But to answer the question, I think it's a really good one, because when I came to Rentokil in late 2008, my boss explained his plan to grow our share of the world's largest pest control market. And it's important to point out that Rentokil had been in the U.S. for probably about 30 years, so mid-70s, if you will, and been about $25 or $30 million during that whole time period. So long time in the business or in the marketplace, but very low growth. And it wasn't until 2006 when Rentokil bought Ehrlich, which at the time was the largest family-owned pest control company in the U.S., was doing about $125 million in revenue. And so you can immediately see that if you were at $30 million and you buy $125 million, Ehrlich was the platform company. Quickly thereafter, we bought PrestoX in 2007. So when I showed up, we were right around probably $190-200 million in revenue. And so the goal was to greatly improve our penetration rate in this great market. And if you think about Rentokil at the time was probably in about 60 countries. We're in about 90 something now. And their focus on the U.S. made perfect sense. Really big market, really strong middle class, and that's a key driver to pest control, as we all know. Great economy, stable currency, and not all countries have that. And so under my tenure, we bought about 125 companies, many with you, by the way, Dan, over the past 15 years. And so your use of the words explosive growth, I think it's really the right set of words. And you were asking about a revenue, but right now Rentokil Terminix generates right around $3.2 billion in revenue. So if you think about it, when I came in, let's just say $200 million, and now we're delivering $3.2 billion. So a lot of this came through acquisitions. Obviously, the big jump was with the Terminix acquisition. But we're also very proud of the organic growth that we produced over the past 15 years. And as you might imagine, my role has changed dramatically with this amazing growth. and I pretty much enjoyed every day.
Wow. I love what I do, but I can't say that.
No. He said pretty much, okay, which means there's a little, there's okay. all relative in there. Look, I love flying. I pretty much enjoy it every day, but, you know, there's your days. No, I mean... So let's talk a little bit. I mean, that's anything that you feel like, what are some lessons that you learn along the way? I mean, obviously, you know, that is a massive jump. 200 million to 3.2 million. I mean, it's just, it's
3.2 billion
with a B. I missed what I meant, not what I said. So yeah. Talk me through, like, what are some big things that you've kind of figured out? Like, I should probably remember this one. I mean, we all have those lessons, but just anything you can think of that just off the top of your mind.
Oh, it's such a great question, because there are some lessons, and clearly I'm still learning lessons as we go. And Brad has been an incredible addition, because a great sounding board, but also has some outside views that help shape my leadership skills. But if I was going to list them, the first one is delegation, and you know, you probably figured that out. If you're managing a $200 million business, which, by the way, is not small in the pest control world.
Not at all.
But yeah. I had to recognize that all decisions could not go through me. If I became the funnel on all decisions, obviously we would not be very good at decision making, and certainly the speed. And that was hard for me, to be honest with you. I've been a hands-on leader almost my entire career. But it was also really important for me to recognize, for us to be big and nimble, I needed to delegate more to our subject matter experts, which probably comes to the second point that jumps out at me, which is you got to have subject matter experts in your team. So, to be able to do that, we needed to promote from within as well as hire from the outside. These subject matter experts. So some of this was already in our organization. We had really good sales talent, ops talent, marketing talent, but maybe we didn't have the best IT talent. And if you think about the IT world, and someone was reminding me, that the iPhone hasn't been with us for as long as we think. The technology development that we've had is a good proxy for the fact that maybe you don't have subject matter experts internally. So simply put, if I was going to delegate more and be confident that I could delegate the decisions and they'll make good ones, we needed those subject matter experts in the key seats. And, you know, the tricky part is when you're a smaller business, you can't afford this talent. So it took a little of these little stepping stones. And it's interesting, when I talk to companies that are getting ready to sell, they've recognized your stepping stones. Maybe they're at 5 million and they know if they want to go from 5 to 10, that they're going to have to change the organizational structure and the talent that they have in the seats. And if they want to go from 10 to 15 and 15 to 20, and you and I've talked about that, Dan, in the past about, these little points of inflection of, do you want to take your company to the next level and what will it take? And sometimes sellers are saying, I don't really want to go to that next step under my watch. I want it to be under someone else's. And so, when I think of field sales, leadership, marketing, digital marketing, customer care, finance, those are the kind of things that I think about subject matter experts. And then the other big learning I had was, it sounds boring, but it's really important, is project management. So if you're going to take the business from X to Y, that's a series of incremental projects that you have to implement. And, it's easy. My dad used to say, you go to a cocktail party and you tell people all the stuff you're going to do. It really doesn't count. I mean, you're at a party and you can make all these claims, but the real work happens when you decide that you're going to do something, you actually plan to execute those. So Dan, you and I've talked about this. It's easy to buy companies, but it's really hard to deliver on the acquisition business case that are associated with the buying of the company. And to do it in such a way that you're migrating the business, whether it's to a common operating system or pay plans or marketing strategies, to do that without destroying value, but actually creating value. So that third piece about getting really good at managing the business cases, which are a series of projects in there, and doing it in a good way was probably the third big learning I've had over the past 15 years.
Are there any authors or systems that you use, or do you develop it? Like one, you know, the MBA, technique of the day, EOS, and the Rockefeller habits and all of that. Or is any of that employed, or are you just kind of going and blazing your own trail?
I think it's some combination of all of the above. I think having the right people in the room is the start, but also creating this environment where their voices can be heard, and they know that they can give dissenting views or throw out a wild idea is a really important forum for getting to the right answer. I tell people, if we're going to talk like this, if we're going to share ideas, just don't get your feelings hurt if we don't act on all your ideas, because not all my ideas are great ideas. And I respect the fact if someone will say to me, I see where you're coming from, but are you aware of this data point or that data point? The second part is, I think this is where bringing some folks in, and we like to promote probably 80% internally, 20% external candidates, but bringing some outside views in to the business allows you to have a better diverse thought process. And then finally, I think there are outside resources, and you mentioned reading. I think, reading the Wall Street Journal every day can help you with understanding how other companies are addressing the same sort of problems you have. There's plenty of business books. I think biographies are a great place to start as well, of learning how great leaders have been successful. So all of the above. But if you're cocooned in, I think you're really going to struggle. If you're willing to have a more diverse process of decision making, good things are going to happen, Dan.
Yep.
Excellent. Agreed. So let's move to a topic, Brad. I'm not sure whether you want to handle this or John. So we don't want anybody to accuse us of throwing softballs, but here we go. So regarding marketing, so last quarter organic growth didn't meet expectations. The stock got beat up pretty good. And so what went wrong? I mean, and Donnie, feel free, Donnie's heavily into digital, was the CEO of Colmarch and whatnot. And so tell us about the whole digital or the whole organic landscape.
Well, first things first, I want to establish like what the answer is. Is it all digital, or like what exactly happened? Like, let's start there, like with the organic growth. Because by the way, I am a micro fraction of another fraction of the size of Rentokil. Okay, let's just be real here. I will tell you, organic growth was hard for us. And it has been difficult, mainly because of what happened. I mean, in our little space of the universe, it's been like we took some cancels last year, and we're kind of feeling the headwinds of that off of the big, inflation track that we took. And so we're getting it back, but it has not been easy. So I'm curious to hear, like, what was, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a, welcome to the job, by the way.
Right.
Welcome to the podcast. No. So that's a great question. It's like, what happened in terms of Rentokil? What happened there?
Sure. And, I had the opportunity beginning of March, so we'll call it almost 2 months ago, along with our group CEO, Andy Ransom, our group CFO, to present to the investment community our 2023 results. And as part of that, we kind of talked about not only what went wrong, but also, our plan to reinvigorate organic growth in the U.S. And you know, in my mind, the way that I framed it is, and you two appreciate this, just like any organization, there's a long, long list of things that John and I are both really proud of. You know, the organization's just hitting the ball out of the park and making great progress every single day. There's one area of opportunity. It is organic growth. And this really goes back to the second half of last year. And we've been very open in saying that we're disappointed with our organic growth performance. And as part of that March discussion, what we presented to the investment community was a framework that we're using internally to help drive us forward. And we're calling it the right way to grow. And there really are four components to how we're thinking about this framework that addresses some of the issues that we've experienced. You know, the first component is employer of choice. And you know, that's something that John's talked about, Andy's talked about. And I consider that a strength for us. You know, for such a big organization, we do a really nice job of, what I say, hiring, training, and retaining just wonderful people who want to be a part of our team, who want to solve our customers' problems. You know, do we have opportunity for improvement? Sure. But that is really, in my mind, kind of a foundational strength that we have in our business. You know, the second piece is all around customer acquisition. And, you know, there's a big marketing component to that. There's a big sales component to that. And if we can point to anything to where we say, hey, we should have done that better, we need to do better, it's on the customer acquisition side. And I think, you know, for two folks that have been in the industry a long time, you can understand the challenges, right? You're bringing together big commercial company, big residential company. There's kind of the puts and takes of people coming and going with the integration. But for us, the great news on that is we've built a really terrific team. So as we come into 2024, we've got for the first time a fully staffed commercial leadership team from marketing, sales, and field leadership, which we really didn't have that at any point in 2024. And then when we talk specifically about marketing, you know, one of the other pieces that we shared is we haven't invested in the brands as much as we have. So when you think of kind of top of funnel marketing execution, we haven't leaned into that in the same way we should have or maybe historically had done. But we're changing that. In March, we rolled out a new brand campaign for the Terminix brand that we're calling Terminixit, kind of a fun campaign that we think is really resonating with our customers. And we're really focused on the bottom of the funnel execution. And to me, that's just kind of day-to-day blocking and tackling on how we're talking to our customer. The third component, and this is the most obvious thing that I'll share today, is we've got to deliver a really consistent and dependable service experience for our customers. You know, we're providing something that's really, really important to our customers, both at their homes and their properties. We need to make sure we're delivering on that promise every day. And then the fourth piece is we want to retain the customers we have and ideally grow that relationship over time. So when you think about the four components that I just discussed, feel really good about employer choice, feel really, really good about our service experience. And let's say from a retention standpoint, we're good. I would say we can be better, but that's certainly when you compare it from a year-over-year perspective, not the issue. You know, the real opportunity for us is making sure we're acquiring new customers into our business that where we can develop long-term relationships. And, you know, for me, I'm a, you know, maybe it's my military background, but I think it's really important to have a disciplined framework in place that John and I can communicate to our entire organization. And communication, you know, we're talking about lessons learned. That would be another piece that I would offer up to the audience is no matter the size of your company, you know, communication and making sure your team's informed, aligned around what you're trying to accomplish and feel like they have a vested interest in the outcome is really, really important. So that's as John and I talk about everything that we're trying to do in the business, and in particular around reinvigorating organic growth, communication is the bedrock of our path to success.
I got to believe with organic growth, like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but like, it seems like to me, you guys would be very focused on the integration. I mean, that was the Terminix thing was, that wasn't a small acquisition.
Yeah. And then it's a big project.
You know, yeah. I mean, so were there like, I guess my question is, were there limitations, I guess, put on expectations for organic growth? Because if, I mean, I don't sit in the seat, I'm not asking or saying, giving advice at all, but it would be like, hey, let's get this integration done. Let's get that right. And then we can kind of get back on organic growth, like really, really get on the gas. Was there any, I guess my question is, was that taken into consideration? I mean, has that been communicated? Does the market understand that, or is that?
Yeah, you know, it's another really, really terrific question. And, you know, one thing I appreciate about Andy and our leadership is they've been really transparent with our external investors, but also our internal team, in saying that we understand anytime you do an integration, no matter the size, it's a challenge, right? There's lots of change that you're introducing mm-hmm. into the business. And again, Andy's been really open with the investment community, saying, hey, we know this isn't going to be easy. We've guided for 2024 to 2-4% organic growth. And I think very, very, thoughtful approach to how we're talking about the integration and how we're thinking about growth in 2024.
Gotcha.
So how about, this is an industry issue, and if I were to start another business again, it would be Google. they make money hand over fist and have relatively little accountability to anyone. But it seems that digital marketing costs are an industry-wide issue, and Google dictates the game. Is this a slippery slope? Is this a necessary evil? Or what's the next new thing? What do you guys think about, you're on digital and how Google operates?
So John, maybe I take the lead on this one and follow up if you like. You know, it's interesting. We kind of talked about the evolution of, you know, this space, marketing, how our customers interact with us. And, you know, I've been fortunate that I've worked for big B2C companies, big B2B companies. Now I'm in Rentokil Terminix, which is a perfect combination of the two. And for me, the one thing I've learned when it comes to digital marketing, I'm probably preaching to the choir here, you just got to be really nimble, right? I mean, it's certainly a moving target. And what you did 2 years ago certainly is not going to be the path to success today or 2 years from now. So I'm really proud of our team and the approach that we take to marketing. You know, digital marketing, clearly an important and key component to our marketing strategy, but it's only one of many components that we have and how we communicate with our customer. You know, for me, when I think about the importance of marketing, it's really understanding who your customer is, what's important to them, and finding a way to communicate with them in as a personalized manner as possible. Much easier said than done. But, you know, on the digital, going back to the kind of the root of your question, yeah, it's changing, right? And it's going to change in the first half of this year. We're going to change with it. We understand that's how our customers digest information. That's how they connect with us in many, many cases. So we're going to try to do that as effectively and cost efficiently as we can by trying to stay just a little bit ahead of the changes that the market is seeing.
John, anything to add?
The only thing I would add to it, and it's embedded in what Brad said, is your reputation in the marketplace influences your results digitally. So having a great focus on delivering the kind of customer service, both on the phones or, you know, chat or whatever way they want to talk with you, but also completing the service, is incredibly important to your effectiveness and digital performance. I mean, the number one reason a customer quits any pest control company is not complex. You fail to solve the pest problem.
Right. Right.
I have ants and I still have ants, you know?
Yeah. Sorry. It's funny you say that. When we used to work with companies, and we worked with a lot, you know, you can't put lipstick on a pig is what I would tell folks. I mean, if your service is not in the slot, it's like we could do all the things in the world, but your customers are hammering you online. All I'm going to do is exploit that. And so people more and more that you've got operational issues you need to fix. But so I agreed with that 100%.
Yes. So going back to the Google thing. So when I got into the business, we had the yellow pages. And John, you probably caught the tail end of that. And, you know, when I got in, you put a dollar in, you got $10 back. Right. And then by the time the yellow pages kind of petered out, it was probably less than dollar for dollar. I see Google as a modern age yellow pages that is still technology, so it's not going to peter out. Is that always going to be an important part of digital, or what's the next thing with digital?
Well, Brad, maybe I'll take a shot at this one.
Sure.
A little bit of I'm not a futurist, Dan, so I just tell you as a business
Donnie
person.
Is.
Well, there you go. My view is that when customers or prospects in this case have a pest problem, they want a solution. And it's moving towards having someone do it for you. So the forum for accomplishing that is going to be really important. And you talked about Yellow Pages in a way that was the forum for handling it. I think the Google type solution will continue. What will become more and more important is, can I interact with the customer the way I want to interact with the customer? So in other words, with the Yellow Pages, of course, there was a telephone number, right? And you called the number and you talked to somebody and you scheduled the work and it went like that. The original step, to your point, was Google was in effect electronic Yellow Pages. You know, it was just telephone number, you called them. Now is the ability to self-schedule and get that schedule to fit with my schedule and my home or my property, and to do it at a value prop that I think is really important. So I don't see it going away, but I see the interactions changing to become more and more sophisticated. And I think that probably favors us, because we have branch locations that cover 93% of the U.S. population. So when people say to me, can you treat my property? I almost say yes before they even answer, you know, finish their question.
Well, you got 93% odds.
Yeah. And, you know, if most people aren't going to call me about something in the hinterland. So with that in mind, I see it continuing, continuing to evolve. But we're not going backwards, obviously, Dan. We're going to go forwards on a digital platform.
Yeah.
Let me just add to that real quick, because I do think that with the advent of AI and you know, Google search generative experience where they're you know, the long tail keywords, and I don't want to get into a whole marketing discussion, but the reality is that the sophistication level and the amount of personalization, like that's where the opportunity is going to be in digital. And it is very difficult. Like, you know, in the past, it could be Pest Control Raleigh and you were good. And it's just not the case anymore. So the level of sophistication is going to continue to go up. But much like what John said, it also creates a ton of opportunity. So we're going to talk about, you know, Google SCG in a later episode. But for now, let's keep it on Rentokil. So
good.
Let's talk about the big stuff. So last time you guys were here, we were talking Terminix. And obviously the big deal, we guys were on the backside of that. And John, I remember you saying, hey, let's check in another year, see how it's going. I think we did that. So let's talk about, you know, okay, so we've done the deal. I'm assuming you guys are still working on the integration. I'm not sure how far along you are, but can you just talk through a little bit about how's the integration going? Are you guys recognizing the synergies yet? Is it still too early? Is this like something more of a 5-year, 10-year plan? Can you just kind of talk through where you guys are at and what's going on?
It'd be my pleasure. And Brad, maybe you can help me as well. But you know, I think the first place to start is the cultural piece of the integration, because I think that's an important part of the delivery of the financial synergies. And in my mind, there's a lot of similarities of culture at the field level. And that's really important, but that's the vast majority of our workforce, our colleagues are there. And particularly important because there's been a lot of changes in Memphis over the last 10 years. But the field leadership, and most notably the branch managers, have remained interested in focusing on what frontline colleagues need and their customers. So as a result, I feel like we really received a welcome response from those colleagues when we presented what we're calling the Rentokil Terminix way of doing business. So it's an important set of words there. It's not the Rentokil way. It's not the Terminix way. It's pulling together the best from both of the businesses and making it one. And that's a little bit of a pragmatic approach, by the way. We could look inside Rentokil. We could look inside Terminix. And we could look out in the grand world and say, let's create the best of the best. But the pragmatic approach is take proven processes from both, put them together in a timely fashion, and then after they're together, start to look at the best of the best and create new solutions. So the culture side, I think, is going pretty well. As it relates to the financial synergies delivered from the merger, we've got a very clear plan that delivers the financial results while not destroying value. And an important part of that is we realize this should take multiple years to accomplish. Now, we could have written the business case to say that we were going to go, quote unquote, big bang approach and just, you know, force the integration through. But I think that would have destroyed values and been really hard on our customers and really hard on our frontline colleagues. Instead, we've got a multi-step program over multiple years that allows us to move forward, but also achieve the overall goals in a timely manner. And, you know, if you read what we spoke to the markets about, we're finding more synergies than our original plan. So that's good. We're also recognized the plan's going to take a little bit longer than we originally thought. And I think that's a really good recognition on our part that we're just not going to force fit something into an artificial timeline. Yeah. Brad, anything you want to add?
No, listen, I think you covered all the key points. And, you know, one of the things that I've been really, really pleased with is we talked to our team members across the country. They see this value creation that John's talking about. You definitely get the sense there's a 1+1=3 mentality across the business. People are excited about what this business is going to look like as we move forward. And as I think about how the business is going to evolve, we know it's going to evolve. You know, our space is evolving very, very quickly. But the one thing that we're being really intentional about is we want to make sure that we're grounded in the culture. And I know that term gets thrown around quite a bit, but when we think about, you know, the companies that we're bringing together, the common cultures, the common values that we have in place, for us, we believe that's part of the secret sauce that makes us successful. So we're going to, again, we're going to continue to move forward, but we're not going to lose sight of what makes us special.
So any plans to maybe merge or eliminate some of the brands? There's a lot of brands under both companies. Are there synergies in having fewer brands, just, you know, cost savings and whatnot?
No, it's a great question. And, you know, you heard John talk about all the acquisitions that have happened over the years. And, you know, we've got some tremendous brands. So we're in a really good position right now where we're going through that process, identifying, you know, what our go-forward brand portfolio is going to look like. Still work in progress. So maybe the next time we come on, we can give you a deeper update on that. But we're really excited because we're in a great position. As I said, we've got the number one residential pest control brand in Terminix and a number of other just terrific brands that are really, really strong local brands.
So let's switch gears. And, you know, when we were talking about organic growth, and I kind of mentioned on our front that we were dealing with some cancels. Part of that on our part was we pushed some pretty big price increases to try to keep pace with inflation, particularly last year in 2022. And a lot of our listeners kind of followed suit. You know, they, you know, some were 10%, some were 15%, and we talked about this a lot. Did you guys do the same? And if so, did you see kind of a similar thing with retention? Or I just want to talk about how did you guys approach inflation and what have you done and what are you doing? I think it's still an issue. I don't think it's tampered off a bit from what it was doing, you know, over a year ago. But just curious to hear what did you guys do and how did you deal with it and what are you doing now?
Yeah, you know, it certainly has been a roller coaster when it comes to inflation the last few years. And again, we're in a really special situation because we've got a big commercial business in Rentokil, big residential business in Terminix coming together. So you can kind of compare pricing best practices. You know, for us, when we think about inflation and how we deal with that, how we pass it on to the customer, you know, the first thing that we always consider is how can we offset as much of that internally on our side just by continuous improvement type activity. So that's always the first step for us. And then, you know, having a really, and I've used this word a few times, a really thoughtful approach to how we pass costs on to our customer, because the one thing that we never want to lose sight of is we want our customers to see the value in the service that we offer. And we're never going to be the cheapest player in town. We also want to make sure that we don't lose that connection with the customer. So, you know, we could have a couple different answers to that question as far as what we passed on. But, you know, we've been, I think, pretty open with the investment community saying we're generally in kind of the mid-single digit territory on average on what we pass on to customers. That could fluctuate from one year to the next, but that's kind of generally the range that we're in.
So, I was going to say, so then my question is any plans for, like, I mean, obviously I agree with you as far as, like, you know, adjusting for inflation, you should always start with efficiency, right? Can we make this up in a way that we don't have to pass it along, or can we leverage technology, or I don't want to say routing, but something where we can certainly deliver the service in a more economical way. And if we can capture that increase there, fantastic, right? But is there any plans kind of in the future of how you guys are going to, I mean, assuming inflation kind of stays where it's at, do you guys feel pretty good about where pricing's at, or do you feel like there's still more to do there?
We feel pretty good. We feel pretty good about where pricing's at. Again, I think we've learned a lot over the past few years, like every other company, and we're just going to continue to follow the process that we have. You know, as a public company, we're generally pretty transparent on what we pass on from a price perspective, and we don't see any huge deviation to what we've done in the past.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
I feel like a lot of the industry has raised prices significantly, 10 to 15%. And so we do that pest index. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but what that does, some of the behind the scenes conversations are, is that growth from price increases, and what does your customer count look like, right? So the industry is growing 10, 12, 14% according to the index. Although last month we were down a little bit. It'll be published if it hasn't been. I think it was 8%. But is that just from price increase, and have customer counts kind of stagnated? Is that, you know, are you looking at that?
Well, I'm going to be very careful in how I answer this question, because, again, we're a public company here. So I want to make sure I'm not sharing anything that's not public. But I'll say this, you know, we're focused on every lever when it comes to organic growth, right? You know, price is certainly a component. And like I said, very, very thoughtful process around price. But we also want to make sure that we're growing our customer count. You know, that's really important for us. And the reason that's important is we want to make sure we grow that customer base over time, have a really strong portfolio business, kind of augmented by nice, healthy job business that comes in, or one-time job business that comes in. So, you know, for us, not going to answer your question specifically.
That's fine.
I will tell you, it is a really kind of well-rounded approach that we take to organic growth, because we know in order to, again, have this kind of sustainable growth, we've got to get benefit from each part of the puzzle.
Yeah. Well, I know Dan is chomping at the bit to talk about M&A. So I'm going to let him kind of take our next topic here.
So maybe you can answer some of these questions. One of them is public. So let's talk M&A. We've done quite a few deals with you guys over the last several years. Probably the highest value deal we've done with you is RK Environmental, who caters to a very high-end market, food, pharma, food safety and whatnot. Is that an area that you consider high growth? Is that, on the Rentokil side, your commercial, on the Terminix side, your residential? How does that really high-end work fit into the portfolio?
Yeah, it's a great question, Dan. And we love that RK Environmental deal. And as you know, we've been talking with Hank for years about it. And when it came to market, we were very excited to be the chosen buyer. It's probably medium growth, but it's highly important to us. We have this incredibly well-established reputation in the U.S. and Canada, but also around the world, for being the supplier of choice for high-dependency customers. So the chance to buy a company that is very much right there in that sector was really exciting. And, you know, we put the time in, and I know Hank knew that we were going to be the right set of hands to take over his company. And we've enjoyed it. So as it relates to the future, there's no doubt in my mind that we'll be at the table when the best pest control companies come to the market. And, you know, sometimes I get this question about, well, you're doing the Terminix deal. You definitely don't want to do anything in M&A, and that's just not true. We want to be at the table for the best companies. We think we'll continue to be the buyer of choice. Because, you know, 15 years of history of treating new acquisitions with the respects they deserve is a really great reputation. So we'll continue to leverage that.
So what are you seeing for the next 5 years or more? Are you seeing things slow down? I'm definitely seeing some changes in you know, our funnel, in the level, the appetite by buyers. Private equity is a very large player now, and you've got to treat that differently. What do you guys see?
Yeah, I you know, first of all, it's hard because, you know, when you work in the pest control industry, you forget how great an industry this is compared to other industries. Right. And I get that reminder routinely, and Brad, you know, has gotten a quick lesson on, wow, this is a really good industry to be part of. Fantastic. So I think we're going to continue to see a lot of demand for good businesses. And look, I'm not an economist, not a futurist either, as I said, but so I'm not going to call the peak in pricing, but clearly higher cost of capital is going to have some sort of impact. The good news for us, and, you know, Brad mentioned it, we are a public company, and there's pluses and minuses to being a public company, but the ready access to capital at really good rates means that we'll be able to show up at the table with really good offers for really good companies. And I think we'll be doing, you know, acquisitions in the 10 to 15 company range a year. We'll be selective to make sure that they fit our strategy. It might be, once again, an RK environmental type company because it fits that component, or it's an infill to build capacity in our market, our current footprint, but we'll definitely be there.
So is that 10 to 15 in pest control or across, you know, Ambius and lake management? And
all I think simply put, yeah, great question. We'll do deals in Ambius. We'll do it in our lake business. We'll do it in our vector business, Steritech distribution. But absolutely 10 to 15. We're well on track to do 10 to 15 in pest control.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Great. Well, John and Brad, it's been fantastic having you guys here. It's always good to rehack. Brad, welcome to the fold here.
We will certainly
get into the Army thing maybe on a future episode. We can talk through that at length. But it's great to hear from you guys. It's great to see you. It's great to hear what's going on. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to update us as well as our listeners on what's happening with Rentokil, and just kind of, I mean, what you guys have done has been nothing short of amazing. And I'm not just saying that. I mean, you guys have a great system for an M&A and then just what has happened with Terminix and just in general, just the growth. I mean, the numbers and the report card says it all. And so it's just great to get that perspective for our listeners, and really appreciate you spending your time with us. Dan, anything to add before we finish out here?
No, just thank you so much for joining us. And I think that our listeners will get a lot of value out of this. And it's been a great conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Thank you. All right. Just a reminder that all resources and topics that we talked about today are available on the podcast website, pmpindustryinsider.com. Just take a look under show notes. And we always appreciate any positive reviews that you have. Just go any however it is that you consume the podcast. If you have complaints, concerns, or just general complaining at all, we ask that you pass that to Dan. And with that, we're going to sign out. We'll see you all next time. Take care.
Take care.
Bye now.